Lunchtime on a Friday. And it's not just any Friday. It's opening day for the Colorado Rockies. Their home opener. First pitch is at 2:10. Austin Gomber's on the bump for the Rocks. And we're going to keep you set for that game. Get ready for it. You still got an opportunity to come down here and win a prize. A pretty sweet prize. You got to come down. Scan our QR code. We're upstairs at El Patio. We're hanging out on the back couches. Come say hello, but you can't miss our big Denver sports banners. And that's where the QR code is to win our special prize. You can also win. We got some autographed Colorado Rockies gear. That's actually a cargo. That's a nice one there. Cargo autograph diving out there.
Hey, back in the good old days, man, right?
Yeah.
Cargo. You know what Cargo did when he was in Denver? He won.
That's right.
When Cargo was in town, the Rockies were generally a good baseball team.
Yeah, it's cool stuff going on. So come down, say hi, see if you can go home with the prizes here today. But you got to come, scan the QR code, and say hello to us here at El Patio Denver. All right, we'll get to the Rockies. The Ball Arena Bros were both in action last night. One lost, one won. The Nuggets unfortunately took the L. The Avs got it done up there in Minnesota. But I want to talk about the quarterback and the potential quarterback that the Broncos could bring home with the 12th overall pick in April's draft that is just, 3 weeks away now from it going down. Well, Bo Nix had talked about the individual meetings, the top 30 visits, and the conversations he's had with Sean Payton so far. And Bo says it would mean a lot to get the chance to play for Sean Payton.
It would mean a lot. And I know that I'd learn a lot and grow a lot. And ultimately, you know, just compete and just be the best version of myself I can be so that, you know, maybe at the end of the day, you work hard enough and maybe those comparisons start to see some parallels truly in the league.
All right, so he is salivating at the opportunity, right, to come be the next Drew Brees, as people tend to call him or at least relate to him when they're talking about who he could be. I think this is going to make its rounds today and over the weekend, and Bo Nix saying that, and it might be genuine, right? The kid, why would he lie? He probably wants to play for any NFL coach that's willing to draft him and give him a shot to chase the starting job. If you're sitting in Bo Nix's apartment or wherever the heck he lives and you're having a real conversation with him, what do you think the conversation's like around Sean Payton for not Bo, but all of these younger quarterbacks with what we've learned, Will, of they know that Sean's going to come and throw a ton at them,
yep,
and just give them a pop quiz right from the jump.
Well, first of all, Bo Nix wants to play for Sean Payton because Bo Nix is running out of suitors in the first round. So
yeah.
Do you know how many millions of dollars Bo Nix has on the line being drafted potentially by the Broncos in the first or falling to the second round? It's kind of what Drew Locke went through 5 years ago, 6 years ago out of Missouri, that many thought he was going to be a first-round pick, ended up being a second-round pick. That has cost Drew Locke a ton of money. So in some senses, maybe you call me cynical, Bo's campaigning, I want to be a Bronco or I want to be a Raider, because he knows that's the difference maybe between being a first-round pick and not being a first-round pick. So I don't think we can discount that. Second, your question about Sean Payton. If Sean Payton was here, going on 8 years ago now, Paxton Lynch would have never been a Denver Bronco because he would have failed every single one of Sean Payton's tests. We're hearing all these guys, whether it be at the Combine or even Spencer Rattler yesterday, we'll probably get to that in a little bit, saying that Sean put them through the ringer. Michael Penix Jr. mentioned that at the NFL Combine. So that, to me as a Broncos fan, that makes me feel warm and fuzzy inside, Josh, because for as great as John Elway was as GM for the first 5 years of his tenure, he was terrible the last five. And really, let's be honest, the fork in the road, good John Elway and bad John Elway, was drafting Paxton Lynch, because it all went downhill from there. They never made the playoffs again after that. And I'm not trying to be mean, but you can watch a 30-second interview with Paxton Lynch and know it wasn't all clicking upstairs. So what in the world did John Elway see other than tall body, strong arm to draft him? Seems like Sean is a lot more invested in the mental side of this than John ever was. And as a Broncos fan, like I said, that makes me feel good, because they ain't going to take someone who doesn't have a high IQ. And as we know, that's what? 50% of the battle, 60% of the battle when you're an NFL QB. Peyton Manning never had the best physical skills in the world. He was just the smartest guy on the field.
I also think there's something, too, of, and a something I want to give Sean Payton credit for. I heard Mark say it. Mark said he had the clackers to do what he's doing here this morning. But I like the fact that there's a plan. Sean Payton has a plan in place. And even Rusty's were mad about it, that the plan wasn't Russell Wilson. But you have to be, you know, at least appreciative of the fact that he drew a line in the sand. This isn't what we do here. How long has it been with the Denver Broncos where they had a standard, where a culture was established? That there was no standard. I mean, the standard was obviously Super Bowls or nothing when Pat Bowlen was in charge. It seemed like the standard left when Pat left. And now here we are with Sean Payton saying, here's my standard. This is what I expect out of my quarterback. And if you can't do it, Russell Wilson, I don't care if we have to eat $53 million. It's not his $53 million. That helps. Then we'll throw $53 million away to get us on the right track. I can appreciate that. All we can do is ride with him on that because he's the man in charge and the head coach. And it's been a long time since there's been some direction and standards in Broncos country.
Yeah, and I do think we have to be fair to the trust here. The trust was just executing a really tricky situation, Josh. And I know people have all kinds of opinions about Joe Ellis, and I get it.
I have several.
Okay. But let me just tell the other side of the story. They were given a very specific set of very tricky instructions. Either wait till a kid is ready or sell the team. A kid never got ready in their eyes, so they sold the team. If you were just overseeing something, you don't feel like you can do big moves or have this high standard. You're in this weird transition period. And let's not forget, they did win a Super Bowl when the trust was in charge of the team. Pat had stepped down two training camps before that. So we don't have to get sidetracked on the trust. But I understand your point.
I'm not a big Joe Ellis. I just don't see it the same way. But
I understand your point that Mr. B had really high standards. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, Mr. B got sick, and Mr. B stepped away from the team and sadly eventually passed away. Sean Payton does feel like the first time in a long time the organization's had standards again. Because Nathaniel Hackett, joke. Vance Joseph didn't exactly scream power. We got leader of men, CEO type. Yeah. And then we all watch that first press conference. We're like, leader of men, CEO type, really? And then Vic Fangio, dude didn't own a suit. He ordered a cheeseburger at a steakhouse. I mean, that tells you all you need to know about his leadership skills right there. So I eventually got to your side of things here. That, yes, Sean Payton is the best leader the Broncos have had since Pat Bowlen. Again, unfortunately, I had to step away to deal with some health.
Yeah. Yeah, if you order a cheeseburger at a steakhouse, I'm judging you for sure, right? Kevin, would you order chicken fingers at Elway's?
Oh, hell no.
Okay, all right. I didn't know. I didn't know how committed you were.
Sounds like
to
it's going
to
be that steak's going to be better than them chicken fingers.
I agree. All right, let's keep it going with Bo Nix. Now, the Drew Brees comparisons, they're there. It's been floated out by several different media members, and Bo Nix talked about how Peyton helped Drew Brees make him what he is, and that makes him a great fit for Sean.
Well, I think when you watch, you know, old cut-ups, and when you watch what they did with that system, it was, you know, quick game, get the ball out, timing stuff. Yep. that I love to do. You know, it's an extension of the run game. Sometimes people think throwing is just throwing it, you know, 100 yards down the field and see what happens. I think throwing those, you know, like back out of the backfield rail routes, you know, some option routes, get into some high lows, you know, throw some, you know, quick up and down fades and you know, some timing passes. Those are, you know, what can really open up an offense. That's what we did so great here at Oregon, I believe. And we just took what the defense gave us, and it opened up, you know, a lot of our offensive plan.
And see, that he's nailing it. Somebody's throwing Bo Nix a softball, and he's hammering that thing over the fences because that's what you do this time of the year. I love the answer. But it's easy to say that, right? I know what answers the coaches are looking for so I can cheat on the test. And Bo's doing a really good job of cheating on the test.
If you were in college for 6 years, you'd probably be pretty smart, too. A lot of education 24-year-old Bo Nix has received.
Bo Van Wilder Nix is what you're saying there.
Between his time Auburn and Oregon. Yeah, it's a good answer, but it's the PC answer. You know, that should be the basic minimum for an NFL quarterback, is they're able to spit out an answer like that. Here's the problem with Bo Nix. He's like, you're desperate for a prom date, and the first four girls said no, and you're asking the fifth girl. Okay, there's a 20% chance you have a good time.
Yeah.
There's an 80% chance you're just sad the whole time you didn't get one of the other four. And that's what scares me about drafting Bo Nix is, fifth best quarterback in a draft in the first round? Yes, I understand. Josh Allen was not taking number one, best quarterback in his class. Lamar Jackson, certainly not taking number one, best quarterback in his
class.
Lamar
was actually the fifth quarterback selected that year.
Okay, that's a good counterpoint. Patrick Mahomes, not taking number one, best quarterback in his class. It can happen, but also for him to get passed on by four other NFL teams that needed quarterbacks, hey, we think Caleb Williams is better. Hey, we think Jaden Daniels is better. Hey, we think Drake May is better. Hey, we think J.J. McCarthy's better. That's also telling as well. It makes you kind of regret that five-game winning streak, Josh. I mean, it kind of does. Like, in the moment...
Not kind of.
In the moment, everyone wants to win. I get it. But if they had lost that Packers game and Russ had gotten benched... And remember, the Packers were driving to win the game, and there was a phantom holding call on Green Bay. They were going to kick a long field goal, win that game. Russ was going to get benched. They never beat the Chiefs. We're sitting here talking about the Broncos picking 2 or 3 overall. You know I like the butterfly effect. That is the ultimate butterfly effect, whatever official threw that phantom flag on that Green Bay drive.
It's also, like, what were the Broncos supposed to do? Because Stoke and I said that several times during the five-game winning streak. I mean, what was the defense averaging 3 turnovers a game? That's just not sustainable. What we were standing on with the Broncos in that 5-game winning streak was quicksand.
It was Tebow-y.
It was Tebow-y.
There was a mirage element to it that it was always going to end. For the Broncos, it ended in Houston when they got all the way down to the 8-yard line and then rushed through the pass to Lucas Kroll that was ill-advised. And for Tebow, Tebow's magic ran out in Foxborough when they got the snot kicked out of him in the divisional round of the playoffs by the Patriots.
But if you're Sean Payton, even if Sean didn't believe, and I fully believe he did not believe what was real and happening there. Nice. With the Mohawk guy is here. And he always paints different stuff. He's got the Rockies logo in his Mohawk today.
This is an insane Mohawk.
He's like a local celebrity, man.
Is that the celeb dude?
Yeah, that's like the Mohawk guy.
It's not an imposter?
No, that's the dude.
That's him himself?
That's the dude.
A little starstruck right now. Wonder who gets more picture requests today, him or Philip Lindsay?
Oh, that's a good question.
Probably Philip Lindsay.
I wish Phil had the hair, then we could get them together poked out.
Yeah.
Hanging out right there. But with the Broncos and going back to that for a second, Will, it's with the quarterback and finding it. And I was actually thinking about this on the drive down, listening to Matt, who was filling in with Mike Evans and Stink today. And it's the age-old question of the chicken or the egg, right? We're right in the middle of this with the Denver Broncos. Quarterback or roster, which comes first? And it's obviously personal philosophy, how you look at it, you know, put your GM hat. But I'll tell you my approach, Will, it's quarterback. That's always what I'm going to believe. If you don't have the quarterback, I don't care how good the corners are. I don't care how good the wide receivers are. The quarterback comes first or nothing else matters.
Oh, it has to, especially when it's been 8 years, Josh. I mean, think of who they have tried in those 8 years. They've tried Trevor Siemian. They've tried Case Keenum, Joe Flacco, Teddy Bridgewater, Drew Locke. And, of course, the biggest swing and the miss, Russell Wilson. Sprinkle in a little Jeff Driscoll in there and a couple of other guys. They've tried everything. But what do you do when you can't find a quarterback? You keep swinging. You have to keep swinging until you hit that home run. And, man, unless it's Brock Bowers at 12, he is the only exception I'm even willing to consider making is Brock Bowers. We hit on it a little yesterday, dude. If they go defense in round one, this town is going to riot. People will be flabbergasted. If they take any position on defense in the first round, it's either got to be quarterback or Brock Bowers. Those are the only people I think it's acceptable for the Denver Broncos to go to bed with on April 25th.
I agree. And I also read something last night on Bleacher Report about the top three. You go Chicago, Washington, New England. And what the article on Bleacher Report was suggesting is that it's basically going to be impossible, Will, for anybody to take the Bears, Commanders, or Patriots pick. They hinted that Minnesota and New England are already having conversations, but New England says it's not enough for you to give me 11, 23, and a 2025 first-round pick.
So wow.
A swap, then an extra first, and then a first in the following draft, and that's not enough.
That's crazy.
That means the Broncos have 0.0% chance to go get J.J. McCarthy if that's who they love. Drake May if that's who they love.
Yeah, and those people are in an envious position. They can demand whatever they want, right? There is no commissioner of the league who's going to tell you what you can and can't ask for in a trade? It's the NFL. You can ask for a king's ransom. And if someone's willing to pay it, great. If not, you'll take one of those top three guys, and then everyone will look for the scraps at four with Arizona, I guess. I mean, I'm so hopeful. I've told you this before, that somehow Jaden Daniels falls to four, that McCarthy may or two and three with Williams, of course, going one. I don't know how realistic that is, but if the Broncos could end up with Daniels, I would be willing to consider paying that king's ransom. How about you?
I definitely would. That's the one that I am very, very – I think you and I look at him in the same way. That's the most intrigue for me, and I don't know what the ceiling will be, but I think he is – Caleb Williams, I think, obviously, because he's going to get that chance. But of the top six, it's Caleb one, and I would look at Jaden Daniels as 1A, not even 2, of NFL-ready, let's go today, guys.
Yeah, so how would you rank them 1 through 6? I'll give you mine as well, but I'm curious so your thoughts on 1 through 6.
Williams 1, Daniels 1A, Drake May is 2, J.J. McCarthy is 3, Michael Penix Jr. is 4, and Bo Nix is 5.
Interesting. We have very similar lists. I would go Williams 1, Daniels 2, I think I'd go McCarthy 3 over May at 4. And then, yeah, man, I'm more intrigued. I'd go Penix 5 and Nix 6 because...
I forgot McCarthy, but he's in there.
No, you said McCarthy.
Oh, I did. Okay.
Yeah. I think Penix has more upside to me. I watched a lot of Washington and Oregon this year.
You did.
You know, because they're there in the Pac-12, which, rest in peace, Pac-12. Penix, to me, I had more jaw-dropping, whoa, I can't believe he just did that moments, culminating in an amazing game against Texas in the national semifinals. You know what would have been best for Michael Penix Jr.'s career? Is if he had played like that against Texas and they had lost by a point. Because then we never have the national championship film against Michigan.
Yeah.
Michael Penix would be a stone-cold lock in the top 10 if he never played Michigan. It would have been better for, and I'm trying to remember that game. Didn't Texas have a chance to win it at the buzzer? I want it down there in the Superdome in Louisiana. I almost wonder if it would have been better for Michael Penix Jr. if the Huskies had lost to the Longhorns and he never had to face the Washington or the Michigan defense. But dude, how many times did Bo Nix like make you jump off your couch last fall?
No, never. But it's also, I'm not as down on Michael Penix Jr. as a lot of people are.
I'm not either.
Pushed back on Stoke because he's about the injuries, and I understand that that's a big concern. But
yeah, but he passed everything at the combine. Well, wasn't that everything we heard? Oh, if he looks good at the combine, he'll be fine.
Yeah.
Everything was combine. Medicals are good.
Well, and you know what? I tried to give him a benefit of the doubt on the injury front of, hey, yeah, he's got injuries, and he's dealt with it quite a bit, and it's scary. But how about the fact that he can recover, rehab, and then return to the form of the player that he was before the injury, because you're going to get hurt. It's 100% rate that you're going to get hurt. So I chose to kind of look at the other way, give him some credit for that on the other side. Now, how about this one that we haven't talked about much? Mike McGlinchey becomes your blindside tackle. Does that worry you at all with the left-hand quarterback?
Yeah, that's an interesting wrinkle I hadn't considered. Okay. Yeah, because, I mean, how many lefties are currently in the league right now as starters? Tua obviously is one.
He's got to be the only one, right?
Yeah, Drew, Josh, can we think of anyone else?
Tua.
It's a rare situation, right? Like some of the great lefties of all time, of course, Michael Vick, Mark Brunell. But it doesn't happen often in the league that a lefty is a prominent quarterback. I don't know, man. I hadn't considered that one because McGlinchey didn't have a very good year last year.
No, he didn't.
And he got paid a lot of money to come in here, and immediately people were like, well, this guy does some things well, but he does some other things not so well. And frankly, when John Lynch is letting him walk and the Niners are on the verge of a Super Bowl, that should have been a red flag as well, that the Niners are saying, yeah, go get your money somewhere else, dude.
Right.
We're not going to pay you here. It's not a deal breaker for me.
Okay.
But I'm actually glad you brought it up because it hadn't crossed my mind. And I surely hope it has crossed the minds of George Payton and Sean Payton, because it's an important consideration. What do you think about the idea?
It makes me a little bit nervous, right, because of what you said. He hadn't been the greatest right tackle, and that's not protecting the blind side. But, I mean, he's a veteran. You would assume you figure that out. That's the side that Quinn Miners is on, and I like that as well because he's, you know, transcending into a really great guard in the NFL.
Elite guard.
You're right.
You're going to have to pay him some.
So I like that he has that little bit of help over there as well, but it still would make me a little bit nervous, and then you – the back of your mind, you can't help but go, oh, yeah, all those injuries. And it's all kind of on Mike McGlinchey right now. But it wouldn't turn me off from selecting him if I were in that position.
No, and frankly, with what you've paid McGlinchey, you just have to tell him to step up. Because he's going to be here for at least the next 2 years. We know he did some of those restructures on, what was that, late February maybe? Mm-hmm. Yeah, 6 weeks ago or so. He did some of those restructures, which pushed money back, which pushes his time in Denver back. He's going to be here for a while. Where do you think this offensive line ranks? You know, I know we don't know all five starters for every 32 teams, but to me, Josh, it feels like it's a top 10 offensive line or right around there because there's a lot of continuity there. You're bringing four of the five back. They signed the cat yesterday, Mustenfer, I believe.
Mustenfer.
They got Forsythe. They got Wattenberg. You got three options at center. That's a good problem to have. Yeah. Test all three. See who's best for the job. To me, it does feel like it's a top 10, at worst, top 15 unit in the NFL.
I'm with you on that. I mean, it's got to be – I'm going to take a shot at Russ here, but not intentionally. It's got to be a bit of relief for those guys on the offensive line to know that the next quarterback is going to be Sean's guy. It's going to be they have to have pocket awareness. They have to have pocket presence because not every sack last year was on Russ. But yeah, you want to go 50-50? You want to go 60-40? I'm more of the 60-40.
We've all seen the viral clips of him just creating pressure against New England when there was no pressure to create. That was not on that O-line. That was on Russell Wilson.
100%. Broncos country, what do you make of it? 303-713-1043. Quick conversation here about the Rockies, Will. I got a simple question for you. At 1-6, will the Rockies ever be 500 again?
Well, this season?
The only time the Rockies are 524 is 0-0.
Yeah, bro.
Ugh.
You really think they're capable of digging out of a five-game hole?
You can't rattle off three or four in a row?
No. Josh, we're going to take you back to, I don't know, ninth grade algebra.
Oh, crap.
Might even be a little too. If they're going to lose 110... start thinking about the pacing of getting to 110. Okay. They ain't sniffing 500 again, dude. They may not get within three games of 500 because 1-6, go 1-6 every seven games, they'll be 2-12 before you blink. And then you're 10 under and you're done. Now, do I think they get to 2-12? No. But I think it's realistic after this homestand that they're 3-11, right? You have a 2-4 homestand, 3-11.
Yeah.
You're not getting back to 500. It's like the day the Dodgers beat the Padres in Korea on MLB's opening day. That's like the worst opening day ever that no one knew was happening in the middle of the night. I said they'll never sniff first place in the NL West again the rest of the season. And their season was over on March 20th because the Dodgers were 1-0 and they were 0-0.
So it didn't have anything to do with their play at all. I think you're right. It just, it's the reality that we're living in. It's tough to know that the baseball team, and it's not like the college baseball team. It's the professional baseball team will never sniff 500 because the season started.
Yeah. Ugh. No, they'll only be 500 at 0-0 this year. One more real quick point. I think, too, 103, you know, is the road to 100. Well, now it's at least the road to 103 because can they be worse than last year? But I think I said it to you the other day. It might be the road to 110, Josh. I mean, we were talking historically bad. If your first number is a five with how many games you won, you are one of the worst teams in MLB history. And I shudder to think that first number could be a four based on what we've seen in the first few weeks of this season, or the first week of this season.
A four.
So that'd be 49-113.
Wow.
That's only 10 more losses than last year.
Yeah.
49-113.
But it would seem like a million more. And especially if it's this style of losing, of embarrassingly bad, of literally little league plays that are going wrong at a big league ballpark.
That's how bad this roster is.
Memorable. It'll be memorable.
I mean, the pitchers have an ERA over 8. and that's when they didn't pitch at Coors Field. What's the ERA going to be after the homestand? 10, 11? It could get ugly, Josh.
What way is that wind blowing today? I'm gonna take the over, no matter what it is, today with the Colorado Rockies.
Unless it's blowing in, then take the under.
I'm still going over. All right. Let's take a timeout. Jake Shapiro is stopping by at some point. We're going to check in with Shap, who was just over at Coors Field. But if he's not with us next, I want to start to look at the Final Four. Men's tomorrow, women's tonight. Who gets more attention this year, the fellas or the ladies? We're going to answer that question next.
We're live from the rooftop at El Patio Denver, across from Coors Field for our Rockies home opener party. Leading you up to first pitch, here's Stokely and Josh.
All right, El Patio Denver is the place to be. It is popping. It is busy over here, but still plenty of room for you to come by. Say hi. Let us know how you're feeling about the Rockies. If you don't want to talk about the Rockies, that's okay. I certainly understand that. Holy cow, Will Peterson sitting in for Stoke today. Look at that jersey I just walked. A 00 Rockies jersey, but the back reads, "Here for Dinger." I've never seen Dinger. That before.
Everyone's got all kinds of opinions on Dinger. Where do you check in on Dinger? Are you a Dinger guy?
No, I'm not at all. Actually, it really scares me when he does a 360 with his head like he's Linda Blair from The Exorcist behind home plate. What about you?
Our old friend Benjamin Hockman,
longtime
columnist at the Denver Post, once described Dinger as Barney on meth.
Oh, my gosh.
And I'm not sure he was wrong. It's one of my favorite Hockman lines of all time.
There it is right there.
Yeah.
I'm tweeting that bad boy out right now. Here for Dinger. That's the jersey of the day so far.
Now, you know who's a huge Dinger guy, and this will not surprise you in the least?
Who?
James Merrillat.
Oh, what?
James Merrillat loves Dinger.
Hold on. How is that possible?
Because James generally falls on the side of things that are a little more contrarian, if you will. And I would say about 80% of fans don't really care for Dinger. So, of course, James is a huge Dinger guy.
There you go, Kev. That's that is very fitting for sure. All right, 303-713-1043, RamosLaw.com text line. Tell us how you feel about Dinger. Do you have a personalized Dinger jersey like the guy in front of us that's just ripping it right now? Let us know. All right, well, we have the Final Four coming up tonight for the ladies, tomorrow for the fellas, and the championship on the women's side will be Sunday, and the men's will crown a champ on Monday. Before we break the games down and get too far into it, the simple question is, who gets more eyeballs? The women's tonight, the fellas tomorrow?
It is a really good question, because that Duke-North Carolina State game did end up beating Caitlin Clark in Iowa by about 3 million. Yep. Over LSU. So a lot of people compared it to the Purdue-Tennessee game, which Caitlin Clark and Iowa beat against LSU and Angel Reese. That said, Josh, I am going to go out on a limb here and say the late women's game tonight, UConn and Iowa, is the highest rated of the four games over the next 4 days. We won't talk about championships. Let's just talk about Final Four.
Yeah.
The next 4 days, it's going to do the biggest number. Friday night, tonight, Iowa and UConn of the four. I would assume that NC State and Purdue is probably second, just because our guy DJ Burns.
He's a star, man.
And Zach Edey. That's going to be exciting. Alabama, UConn, listen. Everyone knows UConn's going to win by 15, yeah. So that's probably not going to do a huge number. I would guess that's third. And then the women's South Carolina, North Carolina State, the early game tonight would be fourth. But I think Iowa and UConn will be the number one game of the weekend. How about you?
I agree 100% with what you said. I mean, Caitlin Clark obviously is, it's must-watch television right now. It's appointment television right now. And you know what? I'm not trying to disparage the game or anything. It's never been that with women's sports. Not basketball. Women's sports. You've never had a player command the attention and make me go, I have to be home by this time so I can watch Caitlin Clark's game. And I'm not alone in that. I think there's a lot of people that feel that same exact way, and it's a credit to her as to what she's done. That is going to be the big one.
The only thing I would say, the rare exception to your point, and I think your point's accurate, there's Olympic years where there's appointment viewing.
Okay.
Like if Simone Biles in her prime was going to go.
Missy Franklin going for her
sixth gold medal. Mm-hmm. We were all going to watch that moment in time, especially locally, 18 years old. She went to Regis Jesuit High School. But, yes, women's team sports, this is by far, like, I am interested in the Avs and Oilers tonight. I am more interested in UConn.
Yeah, me too.
I'm going to watch both, don't get me wrong. I mean, you know, a huge game for the Avalanche. But Yeah, I'm gonna watch this Rockies game, and then I'm gonna get fired up for Iowa and UConn, and I'll keep an eye on the Avs. And that's rare for me. If you had told me 3 months ago, hey, you're gonna watch the women's Final Four over the Avs in a game for playoffs, you know, I said you're crazy. But you're right. That's how much Caitlin Clark has done to transcend it. Not that she wasn't on my radar already,
sure,
but she's gone to a whole new level in the last couple of months.
And then there's the conversation that surrounds Caitlin about GOAT status. Caitlin goes on to win tonight, beats UConn, beats Geno, beats Paige, all the things after beating LSU and Angel Reese and the battle again, and then finds herself winning a national title.
Over South Carolina, who's be undefeated.
They'd be 37-0 at that point. She becomes the greatest college basketball player of all time. Does she not? You got to win the title. Without that, I'm not having that conversation.
And I noticed you didn't say greatest women's. You said greatest college basketball player.
I said the greatest college basketball player of all time.
Yeah, I don't have a list in front of me of, you know, folks I can push back on you with. But yes, her career is that transcendent at this point. And let's be honest, some of the greatest NBA players of all time didn't have all that impressive college careers or didn't have college careers at all.
Right.
LeBron didn't go to college. Kobe didn't go to college.
No.
Michael Jordan hit a famous shot for North Carolina, but he was famously passed up in recruiting.
Yeah, you could.
Unless you give me a name that I go, oh, okay, that's right, then, yeah, I'll agree with you on that
one. I got a couple for you.
Okay.
And I'm still not saying this is the answer. I'm saying they're in the conversation.
Sure.
Lou Alcindor.
Absolutely.
Obviously, was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He's a three-time champion.
I was going to say, how many titles did he win? Three?
Three-time champion. He was the most outstanding player in the champion every year. Two-time Naismith Player of the Year. Pistol Pete. Pete Maravich is also in this. Not a champion, but a three-time SEC Player of the Year, National Player of the Year, and obviously was the all-time leading scorer up until what Caitlin just did. And by the way, Pete didn't have a three-point line like Caitlin does to get the extra point there on the long jump shot. But, I mean, Will, that's kind of it, man. Those two guys, Bill Russell, but he's playing against guys that look like me. Bill Walton was really good as a college basketball player. You could throw him in there, but I don't know that I'm putting anybody above Caitlin Clark if she wins the championship on Sunday.
It's also funny you had to go back in time 40, 50, 60 years.
Yeah.
I mean, that shows you how transcendent Caitlin has become. Because you even think of, like, the great tournament runs over the last decade plus. Like, Steph Curry had a great tournament run with Davidson. He became a household name when he took Davidson all the way to the Elite Eight. But that doesn't mean we knew his whole career.
Right.
We knew him for 2 weeks in March, right? Mm-hmm. We've known Caitlin Clark for a couple years now. Yeah, it's a fun conversation. She could be the GOAT if she wins two more games this weekend.
By the end of the weekend, we could be talking about her as GOAT. I was hesitant to do this, but let me do it for my man Kevin Kistner. Christian Laettner was a damn good college basketball player.
Funny hit. Maybe the most iconic shot in college basketball history.
Yeah. And yes, I hate Christian Laettner. Wasn't that the name of the doc? I hate Christian Laettner. We hate Christian Laettner. Yeah, I'm right there with you. So, big weekend for Caitlin Clark and company. And then that's it. You hinted at it, Will. It is DJ Burns Jr. versus Zach Edey. That's the biggest draw from the men's side of it. And I hope DJ Burns Jr. eats that fool for lunch.
I think 98% of the country is rooting for DJ Burns Jr., man. He's so likable. He's fun. He's skilled. Josh, we saw Nikola Jokic come late to his press conference against the Cavaliers because he wanted to watch DJ Burns. And what did he say? He said, I love watching him play. He's skilled. He's lefty. I wish I was a lefty. And it seems like his teammates love him. Wrote about this yesterday at DenverSports.com. DJ Burns at Final Four media availability on Thursday gets asked, what's been the coolest moment of the last week? Because remember, this guy like sold out an Applebee's the other day because Wolfpack fans wanted a chance to meet him. And he said it was hearing Nikola Jokic talk about
it. Oh, that's awesome, man.
And I wrote about it because DJ Burns hears it. Here's the love. He'd kind of be a fool to not have the best basketball player on earth complimenting your game and plugging into that. But, yeah, man, go DJ Burns. Go DJ.
Yeah. I
hope they beat Edey. I can't stand Edey. Edey's going to get eaten alive in the NBA, bro.
Oh, he's got no shot. No shot. If someone picks him in the first round, they just wasted a first-round pick.
Yeah. Oh.
And he's 7'4".
Yeah, I mean, the posters, I mean, think about Nuggets who could poster him. Aaron Gordon would put him on a poster. Michael Porter Jr. would put him on a poster. Peyton Watson would put him on a poster. And I wouldn't put it past Christian Brown to put him on a poster, too. That guy will get torched.
Another thing I loved about DJ Burns this week, I saw him email a professor and ask if they could push an exam back till the following week. And his reasoning was, we just got a lot going on right now partying after the Final Four. And the professor responded with, you've convinced me. The exam has been moved back.
Nice. I'm sure the professor is, even if you're one of those professors that hates college sports, you're probably fairly aware of who DJ Burns is.
That's it. All right, quick timeout. When we get back, Jake Shapiro of DenverSports.com going to stop by, say hi, and tell us what he learned this morning over at Coors Field. That's coming up next.
We're live from the rooftop at El Patio Denver, across from Coors Field for our Rockies home opener party. Leading you up to first pitch, here's Stokely and Josh.
We are live at El Patio. It is getting packed. Still plenty of room for you, though, right across the street from Coors Field. Come kick it. Say hello. Haven't given away that special prize yet. All you got to do is come scan our QR code, and you're in the running. And hang out here. Wait for us to tell you if you have won or not. Will Peterson is in for Brandon Stokely. Jake Shapiro is sitting across from us as well. Chap, you spent your morning over at the ballpark. How is it? What's it feeling like? What's the energy in the streets of Lodo?
So I'll tell you what I heard. The first thing I overheard from two Rocky staff members talking to each other. Just got to win 6 games in a row to get back to 500.
See?
That's pretty tough hearing that walking into your home opener. I did see 2 puke piles out on the street.
Nice.
So some people are getting after it already this morning. But I'd honestly say, and I've covered a bunch of these home openers now. I was on the Rockies beat for about a half decade. This is probably the weakest I've seen the city of Denver come out for opening day. It is kind of lit down here in the direct area, but generally speaking, you could not tell it's opening day if you went a couple blocks from here. A far change from what we've seen in past years where this is really a holiday.
Yeah, that's interesting because we've gone through some of the best opening day moments. Jake, of course, Eric Young Jr., Dante Bichette, Clint Barmas, Kyle Freeland. Haven't had a signature opening day moment in a few years, but what's your best memory of opening day, considering 10 years from now, I don't think any of us will be telling our kids about 2024 opening day. Not because of the atmosphere. Atmosphere at El Patio is great, but because of the product on the field.
Yeah. You know, last year's opening day was actually pretty exciting despite the fact that they lost 100 games. So you never know what's going to happen in a baseball game. Granted, it won't affect anything in the large scheme of things to the Rockies this year. But I go back to my time covering the Rockies, and Chad Bettis had just recovered from cancer. He was making a start against the Atlanta Braves, and I don't remember if this was exactly opening day or like 2 games later. And the game starts with Charlie Blackmon getting a relay throw to throw out a guy on a potential inside the park home run at the plate.
Ooh.
It was a triple, and he got thrown out at the plate. And after the game, I asked Charlie Blackmon, I'm like, have you ever seen the first out of the game made at the plate? He's like, yeah, strikeout. And I'm like, that's not what I was going for, Chuck, but thank you.
That's a perfect Charlie response, yeah.
So that one sticks out. And then, of course, Kyle Freeland's MLB debut here, a Denver kid, making his debut here in the home opener. I think that's 2017. So those are the two that stick out with me.
Talking to Jake Shapiro, DenverSports.com, I got a fun question for you. What do we see more today over at 20th and Blake? The wave or hits from Chris Bryant?
Wow. I'm going to go.
I'm a big wave guy, so I know where I want.
I'm going to go one prominent wave,
okay.
One smaller wave, so we'll count it as 2.
Okay.
Most of the fans might only not see them. Chris got 2 hits. One was a weak hit in the last Rockies game. I'm going to say Chris does get a hit today, but I'm going to say the wave.
There we go.
The wave's going to win on that one.
Does he get out of this funk? Like, do we just have, for lack of a better term right now, the washed Chris Bryant, or does he find some way to return to form and get a little bit of the Rockies' money's worth in this season?
Is Chris Bryant ever going to be a National League MVP candidate? No. So if that's the standard for what he is now, then he is washed, right? If the standard is, can he give you 25 to 30 home runs, hit 280, and be a 2-war player, which is literally a league average first baseman, I think he can still get there. But he's a long way from there, and he's paid, Josh, as the highest paid first baseman in Major League Baseball right now. Bud Black said before the start of the season, we hope he hits 25 home runs, which would be the 10th most home runs for a first baseman last year in Major League Baseball. So the bar for Chris Bryant is not high to just give the Rockies even some sort of bang for their buck. But the last 2 years, aside from the fact that he's been injured, when he has been on the field, Michael Togliatti has been just as good of a player, which says a lot about what they're paying for right now.
Jake, let's talk about Nolan Jones, because he was supposed to be the Rockies' best player this year. All the top 100 lists had Nolan Jones on him as the only Rocky who cracked the best 100 Major League Baseball players. But this dude has gone viral for all the wrong reasons. The Little League error in Chicago in front of 40,000 strong at Wrigley was embarrassing. Ball goes between his legs all the way to the wall. He's not hitting above 100 at the plate. What's going on with Nolan Jones? Can he get out of it? And what did you glean from chatting with him this morning?
Yeah, me and Andrew Mason just had a conversation with him where he has opened up to us about journaling and trying to deal with some of the pressure that comes with Major League Baseball. Look, even the greatest hitter in Major League Baseball history is getting out 70% of the time. It's a sport where you need to self-soothe in some sort of way. So Nolan Jones' start of the season has been a complete failure. And one of the things that I found interesting in covering baseball for a long time is the way these guys deal with the failure and the mentality and the pressure, right? And for Nolan Jones last year, when he got called up to the Rockies, he was coming over in a trade, and Jones was never a guy who played outfield before. So they just went out there and said, hey, go catch some balls. No right. pressure. Whatever happens, happens. He spent all season, all offseason, all winter trying to be like, I need to be a good outfielder. I have the arm, but now can I be a good outfielder? So now he had that pressure on himself to be a good outfielder. There was expectation. And he says today, I need to get rid of that expectation. I need to do what I did last year and just go out and have fun, let loose, and not deal with any of that. I honestly think that's where we're at with Nolan Jones. He just kind of needs to play free, and right now he's putting a little too much pressure on himself to be a top 100 player when he is just a guy who's played 130 big league ballgames.
And we talked about pressure. Will actually brought it up, and we had a good conversation about it, of how much of this 1-6 start, of the errors that Nolan's had, the little league embarrassment that the team has had overall, like, how much of it is just white-knuckling, too much pressure on yourself? And I could understand that part of it, Jake, but how do they get out of that thing? How do you come out and say, you know what, today's not even about baseball energy. Let's come out and score. Well, let's get 4 runs on the board in the first 3 innings and kind of alleviate some of that pressure that we've created for ourselves.
Well, that'd be great, but it's probably going to not be good enough for Rockies pitching if they only score 4 in the first 3 innings because Austin Gomber's on the mound today. But that's the thing, is they just need to not play tight. And it's going to be hard on opening day. This is their third opening day that they've played already this season. That's kind of the quirk in Major League Baseball, is there's a million different opening days. And your question, Josh, it really can't be answered. Charlie Blackman, we were asking him, why are you on such a hot start? What did you do? Did you make an adjustment? Charlie's like, I don't know. I'm just going up to the plate and hitting.
Yeah.
Like,
I'm just good at this.
Right. I wish I did know.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and that's the thing, is these guys sometimes don't know why it comes and goes. But the law of averages in Major League Baseball say you need about 500 at-bats for it to come back to even. So we're only 50 at-bats maybe into the season. So the next 50 for Nolan Jones could look like he's the greatest player in baseball history, and then he'll be back to league average. So I just think, again, for Nolan, it's, hey, can we get the lineup around you producing to get some lineup protection? And then all of a sudden, it's not just on Nolan Jones. And I really actually liked the Rockies' late-game offense in Chicago in their final game against the Cubs. I thought that could be an omen of them kind of finally just flipping the switch and being like, all right, the season started. We need to go.
We're talking to Jake Shapiro of DenverSports.com. Jake, it feels like the temperature is hotter than ever surrounding Rockies ownership. And Dick Monfort made a bunch of comments to Troy Rank of the Denver Post that rub fans the wrong way, particularly that they've tried everything at altitude, couldn't possibly think of anything else. And after Jeff Breidich quit, a lot of people wanted to help from the outside, and they said, nope, you don't know anything that we don't. Where do we stand with ownership in this town, and is there any chance there's some sort of revolution amongst the fans that they just don't go to games and force Dick Monfort to eventually sell? Or will the Rockies be in the Monfort family for the next 50 years, 60 years, and it is what it is, and we just have to deal with it?
The only situation in which I see Dick letting go of the Rockies / the Monfort family letting go of the Rockies is when they pass away. Is there a power struggle with the kids the same way we saw with the Bolins? Because Walker and Sterling Monfort, as well as their daughter, have successful business ventures and all have their own ambitions. Do those ambitions pull apart the Rockies from their grasp. I would venture to say no, because it seems like Sterling's more on the business side of things and Walker's more on the baseball side of things, so I think it will probably stay within the Rockies, the Monfort family, the Rockies will. I don't think the fans doing anything will actually help in any sort of way, except maybe create a situation of leverage where we're seeing the Oakland A's all of a sudden move to Sacramento. Now, I'm not saying the Rockies will ever move, and if they ever did, I think Denver would get a baseball team pretty quickly soon thereafter. But I don't. I just don't see a scenario in which this changes. They have not tried everything, Will. He will say they have tried everything. And you know what? They have been successful in some of the things they've tried. You know what worked 5 years ago? They had the best pitching staff they ever had. And you know what? They almost got the Dodgers. They finished with the exact same record as the Dodgers in 162 because they had a great pitching staff. They need to find pitching. They have an 8.32 ERA after seven games. It's a joke. It's an embarrassment. I can talk about all the outfielders and first basemen they have and the potential pop that they have. It does not matter if Austin Gomber is on the mound doing what Austin Gomber does.
Very well said. Jake Shapiro, real quick, yes or no, is Jamal play tomorrow?
He'll play Monday.
Monday. Okay, there it is. Check out DenverSports.com. Shap, Mace, everybody will have a bunch of stuff up today from the Rockies. Thanks for stopping by, Jake. Quick timeout. Will, let's come back. Kickoff quarter number four. Learning a little bit about Sean Payton and what he's looking for with these quarterbacks, what he said at the owner's meeting and how it translates now to the quarterbacks he's having one-on-one meetings with. We'll do that next.